Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness, Pujya Swami Chidananda Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. The relationship between cancer and karma is really very much like the relationship between anything and karma. That which happens to us because, yes, it is the fruit of the karma we have sown. So if we plant, as I always say, if we plant apple seeds, we get an apple tree that gives us apples. If we plant orange seeds, we're going to get an orange tree that will give us oranges. But here's what's really important. When you look at disease, it's not that you've planted a seed of disease. It's not that we've somehow been cultivating and nourishing a disease the way that you do an apple tree or an orange tree. Rather, the reason that disease comes into our life is so that we can take the next step closer to the divine. That's why everything happens. That's the ultimate point of the law of karma. It's not just a law of nature that acts in this way or acts in that way. It's not just like gravity that grabs you and pulls you to the ground. Karma is a law of nature, yes, but the ultimate goal of the cycle of karma is to be free of that and to attain oneness with the divine. And so disease does not come to us. Disease does not come to us. That's worth repeating. As a punishment. No one should feel like I've done something wrong, therefore I have this bad karma and I've gotten this illness. No. Yes, sure, there may be some seeds in my life that I can look back on, whether it's lifestyle issues, smoking, tobacco, eating certain things, whether it's genetic issues. But ultimately, what comes into my life comes in so that I can take my next step closer to God. So when we ask, should I fight it or should I not fight it? It's not about fighting it. It's about using it to peel back the layers of who we are, to peel back the layers of ignorance, of ego, of attachment, of identity, of all of the stuff that keeps us stuck, and actually connecting with who we really are. People who have been face to face with death, through serious illnesses, through near-death experiences, always, if they survive, they always come back and say, I wouldn't trade that experience for anything. Yes, I suffered. Yes, I was scared. Yes, I was sick. But what it gave me in terms of the vision and the perspective of who I really am, what the universe really is, what my connection to the universe really is, I wouldn't trade that for anything. And so that's why illness shows up in our life. And so when it does, don't think about fighting the illness, because remember, my body has created it. even if it's something as external as, say, malaria. I got bit by a mosquito. Well, the mosquito had malaria. You could say, well, I didn't create the malaria. The mosquito created the malaria. Well, no. The mosquito just put a little something in my blood. It was my system that took that, reproduced it, allowed it to enter the cells of my body, allowed it to make me sick. So all of that actually gets created within us, which means that if you're fighting something, you're fighting in the self. And we don't want to create war within ourselves when you're already dealing with an illness. The last thing you need is also to be dealing with a war. So instead of thinking about fighting it, think about using it to learn what you were supposed to learn. Think about using it to open in the way you're supposed to open. Think about using it to peel back the layers of the self. And should you take treatment? Of course. Because we've only got one body. And the body is a temple. And in the same way that when our body is tired, we sleep. When our body is hungry, we eat. If our body is dirty, we bathe. We're thirsty, we drink. If I cut myself, my other hand is going to come and hold it to protect it. We should do whatever we can to protect the body because it is a temple and it is our only medium to consciousness and to awakening. So by all means, get as many minutes, as many days as you possibly can in this body. But remember, ultimately what matters is not the days of my life. It's the life in my days. So while you're getting treatment, while you are working to heal the body, remember to focus not on getting more minutes of life, more days of life, but how to fill every minute and every day with what life is about. And that's also what disease does, is it? Is like this mirror in our face of, oh wow, yeah, this is what life is about. It's not about all of these stupid little things that we worry about and get upset about and stress over. It's not about who's wearing what or saying what or doing what. It's about my connection to God. It's about my connection to God through my loved ones. It's about my connection to the universe. It's about love. It's about truth. That's why I'm here. And so when disease comes, whether it's cancer, whether it's anything, absolutely do whatever we can to heal the body. But remember that balance internally, body, mind, spirit, is so important. And here's one last very important piece. A large percentage of people who get bit by a mosquito with malaria are going to get malaria, but not 100%. A percentage of people who have a gene for cancer are going to get that cancer, but not all of them. In many cases, the number, it's not even 50%. Now, of course, in cancer, risk rates of 30%, 40% are enormous. They're huge. But what we have to remember is, wait, even if there's a risk rate of 40% of dying, it means 60% of people in this situation don't die. All of the statistics they give of people who eat this or do this or have this gene are going to get this disease. Well, some percent, well, it's more than the general population, sure. But there's still an enormous number of people who don't get it. And the question becomes, why? And the whole field now of epigenetics is giving us such incredible information about the role of the environment on our genes. Now, what's the environment of our genes? It's our blood. That's the environment our cells sit in. What flows through our blood? Well, of course, yes, what we eat, the vitamins we take, of course. The drugs, if we take them, the alcohol, if we drink it, the nicotine, if we smoke, of course. But what else flows through our blood? All of the stress hormones. So many of the chemical substrates of our emotions, they now have found receptors for emotional neurotransmitters. Now, neurotransmitters live in the brain. Hormones flow through the bloodstream. We always thought neurotransmitters were only in the brain. It was just a way for the neurons of the brain to talk to each other. But now they have found receptors for emotional neurotransmitters on the cells of the immune system. Well, this is huge because what it means is our emotions, which we thought lived only in our brain, are talking to, impacting, affecting the cells of our immune system which flow through our blood. And so just as important as genetics, what's in that cell, even more important is the environment in which that cell sits, which determines whether those genes actually get turned on or don't get turned on. Because simply having a gene for something doesn't mean it will get expressed. Simply engaging in a certain behavior doesn't mean it's going to have ramifications. Now, of course, that's not a license to smoke. It's not a license to eat junk food. But what it means is never despair, never give up. Even if you've got a diagnosis, the question to ask the doctor, if the doctor tells you, well, you know, you've got, even if the doctor says you've got an 80% chance of dying, well, it means you've got a 20% chance of kicking this thing. And that's huge. Because from what I know of cancer, there's almost nothing where they tell you 80% chance of dying. At the most, 50%, 40%. So focus not on your chance of dying. Focus not on what's not going to work. Focus on how can I be sure to be one of those who doesn't get it? Whether it's 5%, whether it's 10%, whether it's 50%. However many people there are who don't die from what I have. Whatever percent of people there are who have my gene but don't get cancer. I want to be one of those. How can I do that? And that, of course, is where all of our lifestyle comes in. Our diet, exercise, not being exposed to toxins, so eating organic food, breathing clean air. But just as important is our inner environment. Because we may take in beautiful natural food from outside, but if our inner environment is toxic, well, that's just as deadly. So be sure, whether you're looking to prevent illness, whether you're looking to heal from it, or whether you're looking to just experience a deeper, more profound, meaningful life, this is where the spiritual connection is so important. And remember, our thoughts, our emotions create our world, the outer world and the inner world. The very last point, though, is that doesn't mean you should feel guilty. If you have cancer, don't feel like, oh my God, I've done it to myself, I've thought the wrong things, I was too stressed. No. In fact, don't even wonder why you got it. It doesn't matter. You're here now. What matters now is now what? So instead of using any energy to wonder, why do I have it? Ask yourself, what do I need to learn from it? What layers do I need to peel back? What is it in my life to teach me? Why has cancer showed up in my life? And how can I heal this beautiful temple? In the body, in the mind, in the thoughts, in the emotions, and in the spirit.
You're listening to OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Alaya, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me.
We overcome the fear of loss by recognizing that nothing was ours to begin with. The fear of loss is rooted upon the illusion that I actually still have something in my grip. Right? If I've never had it, I'm not afraid of losing it. If I don't own anything, I'm not afraid of losing it. For example, one of my fears is not losing my diamond earrings. Why? Because I don't have diamond earrings. You can only be afraid of losing your diamond earrings if you've got diamond earrings. So the fear of losing something is founded upon the idea that I have it. Like, I have my diamond earrings, so I'm afraid of losing them. But when we think about things more deeply, nothing is ours. Nothing is ours. Every single thing, every person, every ability is being lent to us. Look just over the course of your life. That which we gain, you learn how to be a fantastic baseball player. You learn how to be a great this thing or that thing. Well, give it a few decades. Let the normal course of life go. As the body starts to degenerate, well, you're no longer a fantastic baseball player. We're attached to so much our beauty, our degrees, our titles, our careers. Well, we lose those anyway. Even if nothing happened and we just simply got older. Everyone retires. Everyone's body starts to degenerate at pretty much the same rate. We lose that. And the same thing in, if it's our money, well, eventually you're going to lose it. Whether you lose it now or whether you lose it when you pass over, out of your hands. God may decide to give you a lesson a little bit earlier. The stock market may crash. Something could happen. But that's just to teach you, yeah, you thought it was yours. I needed to remind you. It was never yours. It's not that God took something from us. People tend to think, oh my God, why did God take everything I owned? Really, you owned it. Really, God took it. No. It was actually never ours. It was lent to us. And this is true about every ability we have, every possession we own. It's also true about our relationships. Eventually, whether through divorce or whether through death, you're going to lose. It's sad, but until and unless we recognize that as an ultimate truth of life, we can't really live, because then we're grasping on. But the lesson in it, the how do I move through this on my path to enlightenment way, rather than just, okay, how do I deal with the fact that I'm going to lose it, is to ask ourselves, well, what is it I don't lose? If everything I'm going to lose, including my loved ones, well, then being attached to these things, attached to never losing them, you could say is a waste of energy. Because ultimately it's an exercise in futility. I am going to lose it. So the question then becomes, well, so what should I be attached to? What should I make so dear that I become afraid of losing that? What is it that's not going to degenerate? What is it that's not going to divorce me or die? And again, that's the spiritual connection. That's the divine. And here's what's beautiful. It's not the divine as separate from your loved ones. It's the divine through your loved ones. And existing in the natural world and everywhere, because everything in the world is pervaded by the divine. But it's not, okay, honey, I'm not going to love you and be attached to you anymore. I'm going to love God instead. But what it looks like is, okay, instead of being so attached to that really beautiful, young, yet young face, rather than being attached to that perfect body, rather than being attached to the way that you look in, you know, those clothes, rather than being attached to the way you dance, I'm going to be attached to your essence, to your spirit. Because everything about the body is going to change, keeps changing. So can I shift? Can I start to be connected to the spirit, the consciousness, the essence, the divine in that being? And that's the only way I've found to overcome the fear of loss, because either you cut yourself off from life. Okay, I'm going to lose everything, therefore I'm not going to care about anything. But what that does is it literally contracts the heart. What the heart does is it loves. I mean, that's what the heart knows how to do. The heart doesn't do science and geometry. The heart loves. And if you prevent it and prohibit it from loving for long enough, it atrophies. So what am I going to love that I can love without fear? It's your essence. It's your divinity. It's God through you. And I can certainly enjoy the form at this moment that the divine is coming to me. And of course, why not? God wouldn't have created so much beauty if we weren't supposed to enjoy it. But just like we don't get attached to the form of a sunset, because we know we've got about 45 seconds before it dips below the horizon and maybe a minute and a half before the colors start to fade. If you were on the beach and you watched a child crying at the sunset and you said, what's wrong? He said, it's going, it's going, it's going. You'd say, oh, sweetheart, don't be silly. Of course it's going. Of course it's going. And maybe depending on how old the child was, you'd explain a little bit about the rotation of the earth on its axis, maybe the rotation of the earth around the sun and how it works. And you'd say, sweetheart, every day this happens. And when he said, but I want to hold on to it, you'd say, you can't. This is nature. And it's the same thing. No matter how much we scream, wait, 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 The universe is saying, sweetheart, this is nature. And so we connect ourselves to that, which isn't going anywhere, to that which is with us all the time. And then we enjoy, of course, all of the forms. But we never fall under the illusion that by grasping hard enough, we can prevent that sun from setting, or by grasping hard enough, we can prevent the moon from setting, or prevent a green leaf from becoming red in the fall and dropping to the ground. You can hold on to that leaf all you want, it's still going to fall onto the ground. It's nature. And so instead of focusing on that, we focus on that which is unchanging, the presence of the divine, and we try to see how much during the day, in how many different people, in how many different circumstances, can I connect with the divine? Because if the divine pervades everything, it means I have infinite opportunities to see the divine and to connect with the divine.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth Radio is conscious living for your soul, every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Mike Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavathy Saraswati with inspiration and transformation. There's so many people who are so poor, and how do you look at this suffering? How do you explain this suffering? And I wanted to just address that really quickly. There's a very, very big difference between pain and suffering. And there's a big difference between hunger and suffering, and thirst and suffering. Pain is physical. Take a knife, cut me, I will bleed. My neurons will fire in such a way that my brain registers it as pain, and I will say, ow! And my other hand will clasp it. I'll run for ice. But suffering actually has very little, if anything at all, to do with pain. We tend to think of them as the same thing, but they're really not. And I wanted to address this because the way that the person asked me the question was as though the people here are suffering, when actually what we're seeing is some people in various degrees of physical, perhaps, pain or handicap. People in varying degrees of poverty. But what's really important to remember is suffering is the emotional response. And I come from LA, where the vast majority of the people I know have
an abundance of financial resources, an abundance of opportunities, an abundance of health, an abundance of food, an abundance of all of the things that you think the lack of it makes us suffer. And you know what? Most of them are suffering. Because suffering's in our mind. Suffering is not from that which happens outside. Suffering is how I respond to what happens outside. So I could have $5 billion. But if there is something that I need for my happiness, whether it's more money, whether it's for someone I'm in a relationship with to treat me in a different way, whether it's an article of clothing, whether it's to lose 10 pounds, from the most superficial to the most deep, whatever it is, as long as there's something between me and happiness, doesn't matter how much money I have, I'm not rich. Because I'm living with an experience of lack. I'm living with an experience of needing something to fill me. And here what I've seen in India is actually the exact opposite. People have so little, but they're living with a felt sense of abundance. And the way that you know that is all they want to do is share. And all they're trying to do is get you to come home for a meal, come home for a cup of tea. People who barely have enough to feed their families are dying to feed others. Please come for a meal, if not a meal, at least a cup of tea. If not a cup of tea, at least a cold drink. Kuch to khalo, let's take something. They're not suffering. We could look at them and say, I would suffer. But I'm already suffering. If I don't feel that in this moment, with whatever I have, it's enough. And so if I get cut as I began, if you cut me, well, that's just pain. But suffering goes like this. Oh my God, I cannot believe he cut me. How dare he? I'm so nice to him all the time. Like I've done everything for him. In fact, just today, I brought him a hot chapati at lunch. How dare he cut me? Doesn't he understand? And then the mind starts going, and these things always happen to me. I don't know what it's going to take. I'm always nice to people, and people are always, you know, hurting me. That's suffering. The blood in my arm is just pain. The suffering is what my mind does to it. And the key is the mind can do that regardless of whether somebody has cut you with a knife, whether somebody has looked at you in a way you didn't want to be looked at, spoken to in a way you didn't want to be spoken to, ignored you, didn't speak to you at all, or whether they didn't do anything and it's just from within. Suffering doesn't need blood. Suffering doesn't need hunger pangs. Suffering doesn't need a dry throat. Suffering is every moment in which I feel like there's something between me and happiness. And so, yeah, there's a lot of poverty here. There's a lot of hunger. There's a lot of pain. And in many ways, it's due to the choices that are being made by those who have the luxury to make choices. Sometimes people say, well, maybe it's their karma. And then Pooja Swamiji reminds us, well, maybe it is their karma, but it's our karma to help them. So their karma may have gotten them there, but our karma needs to get them out. But while they're there, at least here, what I've seen is that connection between pain and suffering, or hunger and suffering, or poverty and suffering, ironically exists less than the relationship between being overfed and suffering that I saw back in the West, or having even more and suffering that I saw Because there's such an experience, an inner experience of lack. And the last piece of that is that, of course, what that comes from is not a lack outside. It comes from an internal sense of I'm not enough. And if I'm not enough, then I need everything in the world to fill me. And everything in the world is never going to be enough because, well, all the food I eat, I just keep digesting it. So I'm full for a moment, now I'm empty again. All the things I acquire, well, they don't work because they don't go inside. And this is where the only answer to that sense of lack, that type of suffering, is an inner connection of inner fullness and an awareness that we are full and that we are abundant. So I wanted to clear that up, because in this land, particularly here in Rishikesh, all of India, but especially here, what I've seen is so much wealth in the eyes and in the lives of people who are living so far below the standards of poverty that we conceive of. And while on the one hand, yes, we should help them, on the other hand, yes, we also should take a lesson from them of how to actually live full with less.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul, every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin, with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation. How can we be faithful, but not blindly faithful? The concept of blind faith is actually, I believe, I can't guarantee this, I haven't done the research, but my instinct is that the concept is actually a Western concept rather than an Eastern concept. Because in the East, in the traditions of India, and as those traditions have gone out into other countries, even from India, there are traditions that are rooted in faith, rooted in devotion, and people's lives are fed from that faith, from that devotion. Things happen. You may have faith in someone that it turns out wasn't really worthy of your faith, but nobody ever that I've heard of in history regretted that they had had faith. The faith in and of itself. See, faith has two aspects. The one who has faith and the object of the faith. So if I have faith in you, well, one part of this faith package is you, but the other part is me. And even though it may turn out that maybe you weren't necessarily the right person to put my faith in. I'm so grateful for the experience of having faith. The faith has changed me. There's actually a beautiful story, a very, very traditional, common story of the Indian spiritual tradition of a man who has this guru and he's got great faith in his guru. And the man wants nothing more than to be able to walk on the water. And he says to his guru one day, "Guru, would you please give me the mantra so that I can walk on the water?" The guru says, "Okay, you've been such a good, faithful disciple. I'll give you the mantra." And he writes it on a leaf. And then he folds the leaf up and he gives it to the man and he says, "Hold this folded leaf in your hand with the mantra written on it, and you will be able to cross the water. But whatever you do, don't open the leaf. The mantra is secret. Just hold it in your hand and you will be able to walk." So the man takes the folded up leaf with the mantra that the guru's written and he walks out onto the water and he's amazed, he's walking. Here he is on the water walking. And about halfway across the river, he gets curious. "My God, what is it? What is it that this man could have written on the leaf that has kept me able to walk on the water? I'm defying physics. I'm defying the laws of nature. What could have been written on the leaf?" And so he opens up the leaf, and as he opens the last fold, he sinks into the water, and as he's sinking, he catches a glimpse of what's written on the leaf, which is faith. And the story is one that's a very, very traditional story. It has some different incarnations, but a very traditional, fundamental story of this spiritual tradition of India in which faith itself is the magic. It's not so much the object in which I have faith that's the magic. It's my faith which is the magic. And people know that, which is why stories like this come out of this tradition. So I believe that the concept of blind faith, a derogatory negative term, the concept of sort of faith without my rational mind, faith without my common sense, faith without this tool that has been fine-tuned in the educational system, in the societal system, faith without that we call blind faith. And so when the questioner asks how to have faith without blind faith, well, we have to look at what does blind faith mean? And why is it a problem? Sure, there's lots of stories in history of people who have faith in someone who wasn't worthy. And it's not just religious leaders. You have faith in doctors who give you the wrong bit, you know, the wrong advice. Doctor advises you to take some medicine, it makes you worse, advises you for some operation, you die on the operating table. Or the opposite, tells you you're going to be fine, nothing to worry about. 2 weeks later, you're in a hospital bed, much, much sicker. I mean, this is common stuff. We have faith in our spouses and our husbands and our wives. We have faith that they're not going to betray us. But they betray us every day. It's a very, very common and typical aspect of life. So having faith in someone that doesn't turn out to be a perfect vehicle for our faith, they don't turn out to have all of that that I have faith that they will. My doctor knows everything. He knows how to heal me. I'm going to do what he says. I will be well. Well, sometimes. Sometimes not. So when we think about faith, the really important issue for me is not so much the difference between faith and blind faith, but the difference between faith that is attached to the object of the faith and faith that lives within me. So you see it a lot with people, for example, with faith in God. I have faith in God, and then my child dies. Or something else horrible happens to me. And people lose their faith in God all the time. I believed in God, I worshiped God, I prayed to God, but God betrayed me. God let this horrible thing happen to me. Well, what that's done is that has said, I have faith, I have an attachment to my perspective of what God is supposed to do. Having faith in someone, whether it's God or a being, means I'm not dictating the results. If I go to a restaurant and I order a plate of French fries and the waiter goes away, I have faith, you could say, that the waiter is going to bring me a plate of French fries. It's what I've ordered. It's on their menu. I've paid for it. But you wouldn't really use the word faith there. If I said, oh, I've got faith he's going to bring me French fries, you'd look at me like, you don't need faith. This is a restaurant. They serve you whatever you pay for. That's his job. This is a business transaction. This isn't about faith. If he brings you anything other than French fries, don't pay. You're paying for French fries. You don't get French fries. Don't pay. Business contract is null and void. That's not faith. That's a transaction. It's a business transaction. So if something bad happens in my life and I lose my faith in God, what it means is that was a business transaction. It means I had faith only as long as God was going to deliver to me what I had ordered, like in a restaurant. So in a restaurant, we order French fries. In life, we order health, and we order success, and we order happiness, and we order all the things that we want. And when they don't come, if we lose our faith, what it means is it was never really faith. It was a business transaction. Faith means I have faith that whatever is right for me, is that what is going to happen? And so the object of my faith may be my doctor, but the real faith is faith in the universe. And so my doctor may have given me bad advice. I may have gotten sick. I may be angry at my doctor. I may change doctors. But if the faith was real and it wasn't just a business transaction of that particular doctor, my particular illness, but if it was deep faith, then what I know is whatever has happened is that which was meant to happen. Because life is not about thou shalt not get your heart broken. Life is not about thou shalt never be disappointed. There's no promise of that anywhere. There's no scripture that said have faith and you'll never be disappointed. Have faith and you'll always get A's on your exams. Have faith and your stocks will always go up. Have faith and your children will never get sick. There's no scripture that says that. There's no real guru who says that. Because that's not what faith's about. Faith is not the transaction. Faith is not about, I see you as a vending machine, and if I put in my dollar bill and I push the button for chocolate, I have faith chocolate's going to come out. It's not faith. Faith is I know inside that there is an intelligence. And in this moment, I'm connecting with that intelligence through you. But if it turns out that what I had ordered is not what I get, I still have faith. And that's why I believe that the concept of blind faith comes from the West. Because here in India, people get disappointed and betrayed just as much as they do anywhere else in the world. But their faith is so strong that what you hear people say is, oh, it must have been God's plan. Doctor gave me the wrong medicine, I got sick, must have been God's plan. My husband or my wife cheated on me. Must have been something written into my destiny that I'm supposed to learn from. There's always a connection back to the faith itself, separate from the object in whom they had faith. And that faith is what keeps them going. And so when we ask how to have faith without blind faith, what I would say is, have faith in the universe. Have faith in the divine. And make sure that it's not a business transaction. Make sure that my faith is not, I have faith that if I do 11 Shiva Abhisheks, my son's going to get into the college that I want him to go to. That's not faith. It's business. It's a contract. I'll do this for you, you do this for me. Faith is, God, I know that whatever you plan for him is going to be right. Because whatever you plan for all of us is right. And we're in your hands. So that's the faith that actually keeps us going. The only thing that is blind, the only thing that if you say blind faith would be, if I'm attached to you specifically as the vehicle of the divine will, and I refuse to use all of the information that I'm getting. We've got six senses, five that we usually talk about, and the sixth of intuition. And intuition is just as much of a sense as our other five senses. Science just can't measure it, so they tend to leave it out. But it's just as present and just as real and just as true as all of our other senses. So if one of my senses is giving me information that maybe this isn't the right person to have faith in, and I'm not looking at it, that's blind. That's the blind faith. And that's what we need to be aware of. If we're getting the information, well, we have to keep our eyes open, keep our ears open, and then change what we're doing. But that's the only piece of it that's blind. The rest of the faith is that which, whether the person is worthy of it or not worthy, that's what keeps us going. So we should always hold on to that. This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week. And I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on OM Times Radio.